Absolutely. Thanks so much, Maven, and all the others who shared in the opening circle. Listening to everyone, I was just thinking about those themes, you know, where does the intersection of spirituality, art, and everyday living, and, you know, how have I experienced that? And it reminded me of my time recently serving at a meditation center. My husband was sitting a long course, and I had an opportunity to go and serve for part of it, and it was a 30-day retreat, and so the meditators were in a pretty, you know, deep internal experience. And as servers on the course, we were doing kitchen work and cleaning and all of this stuff at a very different pace. And so we tried to be as invisible and out of the way of the meditators as possible. But we had this opportunity, you know, each day to serve these meals. And of course, serving, we would just ready everything in the dining room and then ring the bell, and then we were in the background. We were completely out of the room. And there was one young server on the course who just touched me so much by her artistry. She was a recent graduate from a design school, and no matter what she did, you know, she was responsible for setting up the dining room each morning, afternoon, and evening. And on certain days, I would just go out and look, and it was breathtaking. The way she arranged the milk cartons, the way the handles of the mugs were all turned in one direction, the way the ladles were placed in the bowls. There was nothing careless about it, and there was such a reverence to the minutiae, you know, that that was really moving. And the way she presented food reminded me of what Audrey was sharing as well. And she did it with such love, and also with a faint sense of, like, I don't know if this matters to anyone, but there's something in me that, you know, makes me want to do it this way. And at the end of the course, we had so many people. We have an opportunity to speak to the meditators at the end, and there were so many people who came up, senior, you know, teachers, senior practitioners, who came up and said, we would just walk into the dining room after a really, you know, kind of a battle on the cushion, working through our inner stuff and going through this rough period, and we would enter the dining room and we would look at this, just the beauty on the table, and there would just be this wash of gratitude. And one of them actually said, you know, when you walk into a space where everything has been arranged so thoughtfully, it really reminds you of what you're here to do. You know, it really reminds you of your practice and renews your commitment to it. And to me, I think that really is kind of a, you know, art's highest possibility, really is that reminder, that recalling, that reconnection that it offers to our own lives, our own purpose. And Salma and her work truly do represent that. And I'd like to just transition into a quick introduction, and then we'll get to hear her story in her own words. But for those of you who don't know, Salma Restu is a celebrated and prolific artist whose wide body of work bring together many different mediums, cultural traditions, and experiences. In her work, as in her life, she is continually dissolving boundaries. Born into the Hindu tradition, she later embraced Islam through her marriage. A native of India, she would live in both Iran and Kuwait before coming to the United States almost 30 years ago. She is a daughter, a mother, an immigrant, an artist, poet, sculptor, and ultimately a deep seeker of truth. Her award-winning work has been widely exhibited across the world, and she is the author of several books, including one that's titled The Lyrical Line, Embracing All and Flowing. Salma's work blends Eastern spirituality with Western techniques, and her art includes and celebrates her love of Arabic calligraphy, Rumi's poetry, and her deep belief in the underlying oneness of humanity. As she puts it, through the contrasting elements in my work, I yearn and search for unity, and when that unity or balance is achieved, it brings about a tranquility and joy. We are really joyful to have her with us on this call today. Salma, thank you for joining us.
I know I should be grateful to meet you all, wonderful people, and to share my story with you all. Thank you for inviting me.
You're welcome. To start things off, I was thinking that, you know, reading your biography online, it's clear that your life has contained so many different cultural, geographical, and spiritual influences. So to begin with, it would be great to hear about the early influences on your life growing up in India, like a little glimpse of what your childhood was like and who and what were your main inspirations in that
period.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was born in Ajmer, Rajasthan, and my family has immigrated from Pakistan as refugees to Ajmer. And I was born in Free India in Ajmer. And Ajmer is a beautiful city in the sense that the famous Pushkar is there, the Hindu pilgrimage, and also the Dargah of Chishti for all Muslims. You know, they come from all over the world there. So somehow there it was, the union of all religions, you know. And my mother was a very, very spiritual person. Like right from childhood, she used to tell that we are all same and we belong to one God. I think that is really in my mind, very strong, always in my mind, because that thought that she has given us, that we are all same and we belong to one God. And I carried it with me all through my life. And before I go further, I want to accept one of the blessings which God has given me. I know for many people, they may think differently, but I call it blessing. I was born without fingers on my left hand, and when I was very small, before I realized that if I lack something, my mother and father both guided me towards God. My mother used to say, "Lord Krishna is your guide. He's everything for you. Ask him for anything, and he has given you this life for a special reason, to try to find that reason." And believe me, people often ask me, "How did you feel about this hand?" I know cosmetic purpose, it was difficult to look at it, but otherwise I was never handicapped. I could do everything. And with this blessing, when she directed me towards God, it was amazing that I was full of joy and energy all the time. And I can't describe it exactly, but spiritually, I was given that blessing that I could be very close to God right from beginning. So I used to have a dialogue with my God. Lord Krishna was with me at each and every step. And he guided me towards my art also, because this happened very naturally to me. I was a very young child. I mean, 4 or 5 years, I started drawing, and I used to draw with continuous lines, you know. I used to make shapes and images with continuous abstract lines, you know. So my family, which is a large family, we are 10 brothers and sisters, and I'm the youngest of all, and they all have loved me. And when they saw this passion in me for drawing and painting, they all really encouraged me. And they used to tell me I'll become an artist. So right from the age of 4 or 5 years, I was given that feedback that I'll become an artist. And then this thought from within me kept haunting me, that I have to do something important, because God has given me this life and this talent, not without any reason. I have to do something important as my gratitude towards my God. So I kept drawing. I used to write also. Like, I continued that. And in fact, the art became the need for me. Like, I think it's a need for me even today, because it has helped me connect my inner rhythm to my outer expression. So it's right there.
Oh, so beautiful. And thank you for sharing about that, the blessing, as you put it. What a beautiful way to look at you know, what you're given, and what a gift that your parents' perspective was and how they guided you as well.
I'm grateful. Mm-hmm.
Could you share a little bit more about something that I think is very central in your work and that you've already hinted at? Sounds like it was seeded in you in early childhood, this idea of the continuous line.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I just started like that, and then I was growing up, my family decided to... I lost my father when I was 10 years old, but my brothers and, as I said, all were very encouraging towards my work. So they sent me to College of Fine Arts in Hyderabad. So I moved from Rajasthan to Hyderabad to do this art education. And there, of course, my professors used to be very encouraging also. So he said, continue this. I like what you're doing with this continuous line. But do you know why you're doing it? You know, so those times, first time I started thinking, why am I doing it? And it continued till my master's when I went to Baroda to study my, do my graduation in arts. There again, the professor Subramaniam, you know, he would ask me, why you are creating these continuous lines with connecting figures? Because they will automatically form figures, you know. Mm-hmm. So even that time, I didn't know, really speaking. I was too young to really know why I'm doing it and what I'm doing. But slowly, as I have come through my life, through different cultures, different experiences with different people, because I have a large family, I got married into a large family, very large family, and then keeping up these relationships and, you know, moving along with peace and love and harmony, you know, I realized that I'm doing it because I want to connect the humanity. I think that was the thought in my mind, that I want to bring people together. Mm-hmm. And slowly in my work, I started doing these groups of people dancing together and rejoicing together, meditating together, chanting together, like basically just in groups, you know, like crowds of people moving together, and people of all lands with their colorful fabrics and gestures and textures and movements. I mean, it was all coming into my work, really speaking. And other people have put already in words, that I really feel guided, because I don't think I plan my work. Believe it or not, I just take the canvas and I start with the line. Line is my ray of journey, you know, a ray of light for my journey. It shows me the path. And I just start it and something happens. And I started working along it. And let me tell you one more thing. While I was doing these works, I went to Iran and Kuwait with my husband after marriage. And there I was exposed to Arabic calligraphy. And when I saw the Arabic calligraphy, it's moving so, such beautifully from right to left, you know, making all the meaningful words. I was really amazed. I never known Arabic calligraphy before that. So believe it or not, I started copying it. I copied it without knowing, without understanding Arabic. I used to just copy it. And that made my hand more free and more, you know, amazing. I can't describe it, the connection of all these lines, you know, as if I was trying to bring everything together again, you know, the different cultures. I was born Hindu, and as I said, I was very spiritual, and, you know, I was the follower of Lord Krishna and prayers and aarti every evening and all that rituals. So when I married my husband, I mean, my God came with me. That's all I can say. I never had any conflict in my mind. My God didn't leave me. He walked with me, and only the rituals changed. So as I say again and again, that I feel very blessed. I never have any second thought about it, that whatever has happened in my life has been pre-planned, and there is a meaning in it, and there is a purpose in it, you know. So
beautiful. Just to dwell a little bit more on here, I think there are several things that you've surfaced that are really profound. And one is just, you know, just that how you came to this, this approach. And so often we're very head driven, and, you know, we have an idea, and then we try and make it, you know, make it a reality. And for you, it almost was like there was something, the inner rhythm, you know, as you said, something guiding you, and that the meaning, the head part came later, that you were following this beat, and without really knowing what it meant or what it was
exactly.
for, what it represented.
Exactly. That's why I always say that I don't know. But I'm so grateful that when I realize now, after this age, but I know these are all connected. These are all meant to be, you know. Everything
well,
has to be, you know.
And then the other thing is that we have created, especially in the modern world, so many divisions.
I know.
And, I mean, there's a difference between diversity, that you know, appreciating diversity and having that be a source of our connection, and then, you know, using differences to create walls. And I think that, unfortunately, we err too much on the side of the latter. And your journey or your lyrical line, the line that you followed, has taken you. The effortlessness with which your God came with you, as you so beautifully put it. From a Hindu upbringing into the embrace of Islam, and to have that be a continuous line, a seamless transition, is something very rare, I would think.
I know many people say that, but believe me, it's true for me. I mean, when this thing happened, I didn't want to get married to a Muslim, or neither I wanted to leave Hinduism to become Muslim, because I didn't even know about Islam. Totally unknown to me. Like, how much we know as a child, even as youngers in India. But when I met my husband, I knew that something is there, something I felt, and I said, no, I cannot do this. Believe it or not, I thought, I'm married to Lord Krishna. I was like Mirabai in my own mind,
Mm-hmm.
So how
and
can
Mirabai,
I think
for those
of,
who might not know who Mirabai is, can you give a little context?
Yeah, Mirabai was a great saint in 13th century, and she's from Rajasthan also, and she was a total devotee of Lord Krishna. Though she got married, but she didn't keep any relation with her husband because she said she's married to Lord Krishna. And the whole life of hers is totally singing the praises of Lord Krishna and leading these beautiful bhajans around, and peace and harmony and connecting with people. So that was her life, and she was my ideal. So what I'm trying to say, that when this happened, I thought, no, I don't want this to happen. So I have to be careful. But then something in me, kept saying, no, it's the guidance from your God. Your God wants you to do this. And so slowly I accepted. Then I told my mother about it, and though she was shocked, but then when she knew my mind, I have written somewhere, I wanted to read that line to you, but now I don't know exactly. But what I want to say, that she knew that I would not disobey my God. She had that confidence in me. So she said, when it's coming from your within, then it could be true. And my blessings are with you, but your destiny is with you. Like she said, I cannot change what is going to happen for you, but my blessings are with you. And I said, that's all I need. I need your blessings. And she's the one who, though she was old, she was almost 68 years old, because I was born when she was almost 42 years old. Mm-hmm. So she was in that age, and she was depending on sons, but she had that strength, And this is all she told me. And then with her blessings, I got married. Not my family came for the marriage, mm-hmm. but they were all worried, because one of my brother was very upset about this marriage, because he had seen the partition of Pakistan and India,
right.
A little bitter about it,
Mm-hmm.
So, but then let me tell you, through my this marriage, I've healed wounds in my family, at least. Mm-hmm. My in-laws' families and my family, they are so well connected. With love and respect for each other, So I don't know whatever the reason, it just happened in my life. And again, as I say, it was all meant to be. But for me, it was very easy. God didn't make it difficult for me. It was a really seamless transition.
Can you talk a little bit about, as you, transitioned into that new chapter of your life, living in Iran, living in Kuwait, and these are places that, living now in America, the portrayals of that part of the world that we see in the media, so often so stereotypical, very one-sided. What was your experience?
For Iran, I can't say much, because we lived there when Shah was there. I got married in 75, and we went directly to Iran in 76. So 76, Shah was still there. Mm-hmm. And we were there till 79 only. After the revolution, we came back, and then my husband left for Kuwait. So Iran, as I remember, it was a beautiful, beautiful country. I think if all this hadn't happened, we would have loved to continue living in Iran. It was absolutely beautiful as a country, people, the culture, the food, the art, the carpets, and everything. I can't describe. It was such a beautiful, beautiful country. That's what I remember. And Kuwait, Kuwait was fine too. Like, I enjoyed living in Kuwait because that time my children were small, and it was a very natural training for them into Islam. I didn't have to really work hard because in schools they were taught about Islam and the Quran and all that. So, in a way, I thought it was very good for me because at the founding stage they followed what has to be followed, and that way it worked out for me, I think. And Kuwait, whatever people say, no, it was much, much liberal than what people talk. I don't know about Saudi Arabia, but in Kuwait they were pretty liberal that way, like high fashion among women, though they'll wear the chador, but they'll wear very, very fashionable, and, you know, like, I don't know, the women have been given very wrong impression also through media in Islam, but I think women are very, very free, and women are very independent, you know, and the culture has been a bigger culprit, you know, in this sense, because in Afghanistan and in Saudi Arabia and all, the culture is very strict. Like, you know, they don't allow women to rise and do things for themselves. But in Islam as a religion, women are given the full freedom. I mean, it's amazing. I'm telling you because I have accepted Islam now, and I know more about Islam, and I think it's very different from what people talk about in general. And even the hijab is very cultural. In Islam, it says dress modestly. You know, modesty is emphasized, but not covering your face or whatever. You know, I'm just saying. So later on, the culture adopted the modesty into the way they accept it. You know, like, so it's like that. But that's why I was very hurt and very disturbed with 9/11, because that is the time actually I started reading Quran with more in depth, because I said, this is not what God has guided me. He's not asking people to kill each other. So I really, really have worked on it. And after that, I went deeper into Arabic calligraphy. I went and learned Arabic. I started doing paintings in Arabic calligraphy to show the people the connection, you know, like, I don't know how to describe it, but it seems that after that, I got that deeper meaning of my life, that I'm born for a special reason. Mm-hmm. I think this is how it became. When after reading this book, I knew why my God has brought me here. I read several translations again and again. And now I realize that God has given me this book to read, because now I know I have to bring people together. Like, I pick up the verses of hope and peace for humanity from Quran, and I relate them in my calligraphy, because I want to emphasize that God is not doing it. It's people, it's the human themselves destroying the image of everything. The religion is only there to guide you to do the right thing. Religion is nothing beyond it. If you are connected with God, then you will see that all the religions are teaching the same thing. It's only thing when we separate the God from Allah to Bhagwan to Jesus to Musa, whatever you call it. Like, so that's where we destroy the image of God. We are destroying it. But religions are only there to teach us to lead a beautiful, harmonious life with each other. From Quran, I'll quote one special verse which I really like, which says that God created everyone from men and women, and then he made nations and tribes, different nations and tribes, so that you know each other. So this is all in the verse, so that you know each other. I think this has been my inspiration, that God created all this diversity to draw inspiration from each other, to know each other, to live in harmony with each other, and not to label each other, not to disconnect with each other. So again and again, this verse is repeated, I mean, a few times in Quran, that God has created humanity as one. Originally there was only one. It's later on, man has parted itself, you know, from itself, you know, from the humanity. Like, they have created the gaps and the divisions, and now we are trying hard to make the bridges over them. So,
that's a really
but the God has made one humanity.
Just to riff on that a little bit, that idea of creating difference so that we may appreciate our underlying connection is
it's a beautiful thought, you know.
Paradox,
I think.
Exactly. And it reminds me of there's a man named Satish Kumar, who also has a very inspiring story, but a quote of his that I, you know, return to again and again. He said, "Distance is meant to relate, not
relate.
Separate."
Exactly.
Not separate.
Yeah.
And that
idea of
you know, if we can embrace the distance between ourselves, if we can embrace the differences, and use it as a way of connection, as a means of connection, as a bridge, as you said. One of the things I'm really interested in is this, you know, just the art of calligraphy itself is in some ways one that crosses boundaries. You know, it turns the territory of the written word into art, and there's just such an elegance and a grace to it, and so much of calligraphy and its history are tied to, you know, the scriptures, spirituality. And so can you describe a little bit more of how you incorporate, what drew you to calligraphy, and then how you incorporate it in your work?
Yeah, as I said, I think that in Iran, I used to copy this because I just loved it. I just imitate the words. And that was something, it opened up a new vistas for me. And as I was already doing the connecting line with figures, so I don't know where and how, but these flow together, the Arabic calligraphy and the connecting figures. So they are all in one continuous line. They just come together for me. And believe me, as I said, I feel I'm guided. My hand is guided. I'm only the instrument, because that's truly, I really believe. And beyond it, I don't know. But one thing, if you don't mind, I want to go back on the diversity, on this
Absolutely.
Thought, that diversity is a law of nature, as per this book, Quran. Diversity is law of nature. Like, he made it things different so that you connect them with appreciation. Like, if you look in the nature, there are so many different trees, so many different birds, so many different flowers, and we love that. But why do we always fight when the people are different? So why do we always argue, I'm better than you? But in the nature, we just appreciate all the flowers, you know. We appreciate all everything. So I'm sorry I came back to this, but to continue with my...
No, it's a beautiful thought, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I always feel, that why the humans are so... Because of the ego, that's the whole thing, because of the mindsets we have, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, with the wisdom, with the talent, with the skills that God has given us, we don't know how to make better use of it, maybe. But we fight on these small, very, very small and simple things, yeah.
In that context of, a poet who was filled with that divine love, you talked of Mirabai, but
mm-hmm.
your work is also centered around Rumi to some extent.
Yeah.
Can you speak a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Because as I said, I grew up reading Mirabai,
mm-hmm.
and through my journeys, I found Rumi.
Uh-huh.
And I think I call my life In Search of Eternal Love, In Search of Eternal Love, from Mirabai to Rumi.
Okay. Quite a journey.
Because Rumi talks about this, you know, again. And I have, in fact, I'm doing some work recently, which I call Unity of Sacred Texts and Symbols. So in that, especially, I'm doing some paintings with layering different sacred texts on one canvas. And there's one section where I'm going to show these inspirational poets, you know, of 13th century, there are some Muslims, some Hindus, you know, but they all speak of same love and same unity and the same freedom, you know.
Mm.
So I am comparing between Mirabai and Rumi in my work. So I have done some paintings with similar thought in the poem, you know, and I have done two different paintings and putting them together. And also I'm doing some mythological stories, you know, like in different religions, like, you know, in Judaism, they say Prophet Musa was kept in the basket and left in the waters so that he's saved from the this evil king, you know, and Firon, sorry. But then same way, we have story of Lord Krishna, that though he was born in the from Devaki, but he was given to Nand to take in the basket to Vrindavan to save his life, and so that later on he can kill Kans, you know. So there are so many similar stories, and sometimes I wonder, I mean, it's we are so connected. I don't know what else to say.
There you go. It's beautiful to see the way these themes echo themselves across time,
yeah,
cultures, mm-hmm. across, you know, history. It does really speak to the underlying unity.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Before we transition into Q&A, I wanted to ask one more question around, can you talk a little bit more about your process for creating a painting? Like, how does it
sure.
unfold?
Yeah, actually, as I said, I truly, I just don't plan anything. I just directly go on the canvases. Sometimes they're huge canvases, like 90 inches wide, mm-hmm. or sometimes they are small pieces of wood on which I work, or paper. I go to the studio every morning, 9 o'clock, even earlier, and I just start painting, believe me. And that has been my practice for many, many, many years. I'm so blessed because my husband, my family has supported me also. So there has been no hindrance there. So I go to the studio every day and work every day. Mm-hmm. And that gives me, you know, like energy to go through the whole day of mundane other duties. But this is how I start. And I start with line. And whatever comes up, then even the colors I take are very random. I don't even know how they will turn into in a harmony form together. So I use many materials, sometimes copper, sometimes clay, sometimes acrylic media and pen and ink. They all go together on my works, you know, like, and it happens very, very spontaneously. And I work on 3-4 pieces at a time, because I think that energy flow is so strong that I can't work on one piece and look at it, you know. I don't have that kind of time. So I start another piece. And normally in my studio, 3-4 pieces are in a working stage because I move from one to another. But normally they will have similar theme or similar series, you know, like because I'm working at the same time on them, yeah. But then they move along together, like, you know, simply because I think that moment is so strong on me, like that I have to let it come out, mm-hmm. and I just let it come out without any argument or any mind arguing with it that why am I putting there and what am I doing. I just don't let anything happen there. It's just from heart through hand to the canvas.
And then something tells you when it's done.
Yeah, it happens also very naturally. I mean, some paintings finish, I mean, I feel they are done sooner, some paintings take longer, but there's no measured time for any work.
Really interesting. And kind of, it's almost like you're getting out of the way of the work.
Yeah, exactly. We should get out of it. That's very important. Yeah.
Another question I've had is, are there any particular creations over your many decades of work? Is there a particular creation that you're fond of? I'm sure they're all like your children, so it's hard to choose between.
Yeah, I know.
Is there?
But I think each tells a story of that time. With where I am, you know, frankly speaking, I do recognize them now. Yeah. Like my earlier work is very abstract when I left college. So I think it was in search. I mean, all my paintings, if you look at them, full of energy and movement, but they are just moving upwards or going sidewards. You know, like they're just looking for something, it seems to me now. They are in search of something. And then this connecting line began and these figures and all. So even those I call myths and mysteries, because they were not, I was not sure what I'm doing, why I'm doing, but they relate to my death period, my travels, my thinking, you know,
mm-hmm.
how I was moving along. But now when I do the, this is like, for me, I think it's more mature stage of life. And now what I'm doing is more, sometimes, you know, like with an intention, it's not obvious intention, but the intention of showing people that we are connected, a union, you know, things like that. So there is some thought behind it in that sense, you know, that I, supposing I'm taking sacred texts, so I do pick up the text and research that and do it. So I think each work is very important to me because they reveal that time and that thinking and that stage of life in my life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't actually define anything better than other.
It's almost like your paintings are your biography.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I think David might have a question.
Yes, thank you, Bowie. Salma, very insightful conversation. And idea that struck me so deeply is about diversity.
Mm-hmm.
And the message that diversity is meant for us to appreciate who we are even more and find
mm-hmm.
that unity. Such a beautiful thought. And I had a question around that. When I am dealing with people with different cultural background, for example, how do I go about looking for that unity in a day-to-day life?
I think the only way I would think is to love them, know them, merge with them, and you will find that. Without differences in your mind. I mean, the mind should be free, heart should speak. That's what I believe. Without labels in your mind that he's from Africa or she's from South America, or without these labels in the mind, just connect with each other on the level of humanity. Just a human being.
How well said. I loved it. And maybe genuinely try to understand the person and try
yes.
to connect to the heart.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because
thank
recently,
you, so
you know, we went on a trip to Morocco with a group of 12 people. And these are all strangers to me, to us.
Okay.
But I think I was so amazed. They're all from Berkeley, California. Americans, and we were the two Indians there. But believe me, we made such good friendships. Amazing. Because we were all, I think, like-minded people. And that was the best thing, I think. So one thing I believe, if I approach with love, I receive love. If I approach with a doubt, there is a doubt. So until unless it comes, as Gandhiji said, be the change you want to see in the world. So it's so important to approach the other person with that love in your heart.
Start with love in the heart. Thank
mm-hmm.
you so much for reinforcing that, Salma. I would like to remind all the callers also, if you have a question, you're welcome to press *6 and get in the queue. You're welcome to ask questions as well.
Well, I have another question as we're waiting for callers to jump on the queue, Salma. I was wondering if there's any stories you have on the ripple effect of your art, you know, any, oftentimes so many of the influence, so much of the influence of your art, just by nature of it, is invisible and it's immeasurable. And it happens in these quiet ways through each person who sees your art, sees it in a different way, is influenced by it in a different way. But sometimes, you know, as an artist, you do get to hear about how your art has affected someone.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much for that. Because Believe me, when I start painting, you know, when I used to think I'm telling my own stories, my own experiences, my own sorrows and own joys. But when I finish those paintings, people tell me that they are their stories, their sorrows, their joys. When when the visitors come to my studio, they feel connected. So I feel that I'm not telling my story. It's like everybody's a story. So that's very important, you know, like for me, like to be genuine with myself, so that I say what I want to say. But when I'm genuine, when I'm true, I feel that I'm connected with others.
And is there any particular story that comes to mind with that?
Yeah, like I have done a lot of paintings with festivals and Flow of Humanity theme. And in that, I have shown people coming together in festivals or in weddings or, you know, other chanting sessions and other things, you know. So whenever people see those paintings, you know, they have responded with real joy, that they feel that the humanity is dancing together. And I have always been told that in my paintings is a... that's true. I want to show the celebration of life. So people feel that celebration of life in my work. And I feel blessed there because that's what I want to do and that's what I hear from them. I did one painting which I call When She Became a Widow. In fact, that's about my mother and when my father died, and I remember the scene. So I have done a huge painting, the drawing with that theme. And there was one lady who came and she really cried in my studio, and she said, I feel that though the person who has become a widow is sad and she is surrounded by such consoling group of women and all that, but I feel that connection at this sad moment, you know. So I mean, somehow there are many, many stories like that, that people feel connected, you know, with the stories. Because as I say, I always thought it's me telling the stories, but actually I think I'm telling everybody's stories.
What a gift. I think we have a caller in the queue who's been unmuted, so they can go ahead and ask their question.
Sure.
Thank you so much. I really love the idea of the continuous line connecting all humanity and relating to people at the humanistic level rather than where they happen to be born or living or the cultural influences they bring. I really appreciate that. In the spirit of continuously blending boundaries, I'm going to ask a question about the commercial aspects of the art. And, you know, you describe that you work when you have the energy to and it pours through you on multiple paintings. Are there set hours that you devote to it? And then when you have to price it, when you have to do an exhibition, when somebody else, you know, if they're all equally precious, how does one go about putting a value on something that's really
I know. It's not easy, I agree. But somehow, since I have the experience of doing the painting for 40 years, I've learned these tools of the trade, you know, like frankly speaking. In a sense, business of art, yes. So one thing I agree, you have to be very disciplined. I work every day, as I say, and for painting, normally I work in the mornings from 9 to 12. I would rather paint and not get disturbed by other work like emails and, you know, telephone calls and things like that. But then I try to concentrate in that time. Sometimes I can't. That's okay. But generally, I like to keep the discipline. As for pricing, yes, it's very, very tough. But as I said, I've learned over the years. So in the beginning, I just put random prices, 300, 500, 800, you know, like random, believe me. I mean, according to sometimes in the size, when I look at the painting, sometimes I do because I love it, it's more expensive. So, but then slowly I've learned with my art critics, you know, and the curators suggesting, you know, what happens, you know, like if I've shown in New York, they say I should increase my price because the people have, you know, that, you know, because you have to think from the buyer point of view, frankly speaking. For me, all are equal. For me, all have no value or great value. But since I'm living as an artist, I do have to think about this aspect, that I have to sell my art and I have to be reasonable. And I have to be, people should be easy to buy it, you know, approachable. So I think about these things. I don't deny that because I think business and art flow together. Morning, as I said, 9 to 12 if I'm only painting, but then afternoons I'm thinking about the business. How should I connect the galleries? How should I contact my clients? And how should I send the proposals to museums? What's the next thing I can do, what grant I can apply. So these thoughts all go in my mind, but only for a certain mind I try to restrict them, but they're always in my mind because we are living human beings. I don't believe in a starving artist. I think art is a treasure and people have to find it, you know. I mean, I have to educate people to appreciate art. So as for pricing, my intention is always this, that I don't want to make it very, very expensive, believe it or not. And then what happens? It becomes expensive when the galleries are representing you. So if I put the price 300, the gallery would take 50%. So I get only 150. So then you feel that's not fair. So, okay, then I have to increase the price so that gallery takes 50%, or at least I should get 250 or 225. So I'm just saying, this is something, believe it or not, again, that's a blessing to me because I don't plan how I'm going to do it, but it just happens very naturally in my case. But I think if you work from heart, if you're true, the business is also true in the sense there's no, we are not trying to cheat anybody, we are not trying to overcharge anybody. It's so important. So I think that's how I work.
Thank you. I totally am with you that I don't believe in starving artists as well. I think our lives in business especially are dominated by advertising, and all those are artists who are manipulating our emotions to get us to buy things.
Exactly.
So
yeah.
They behave in a certain way to be super wealthy and super influential. But so my follow-up question to you is, what do you find helpful in helping your creativity? I know that you mentioned the energy flows through you. I know you mentioned that your brothers supported you initially when you were just drawing as a child. So it set you on a path. But now, as with years of experience, what have been some things that were helpful along the way so that if we want to support more work by the artists like yourself, how should we show up in their lives and what can we do to enable more of that and less of the advertising kind of art?
Yeah, sure. Like, you know, as I said, if I'm true, my genuine thoughts are there, work is there. Frankly, I feel so good about it that my studio in Berkeley, I get people coming through and then I make one or two sales now and then it keeps going on. So that's how I sustain myself, you know. I don't do too much advertising in a sense. I'm not putting myself out on Yelp and things like that. You know what I mean to say? But people who come to know me, they just come and visit me. And I cannot advertise my art because it's so, I don't know. I apply for grants. Like right now I've received a grant from East Bay Community Foundation. So I'm looking for matching the grant because I have received 5,000 and I have to show the 5,000 in matching. So now I'm sending out some letters to my buyers of art, you know. So that way, you know, I try approaching them in this way. My open studio is coming up in June. So I will send out my letters to my visitors, you know, and my people I know that I'm having open studios, you know, like that way. So that much I do, of course I do, because without that, it's difficult to people to know that what I'm doing, you know. So, and once in a while, like 3 times or 4 times in a year, I send out my newsletter saying that this year I have so many exhibitions and I have won this award and this is sculptures in public art. Like, I send out my news about my work also. So that much I do, truly speaking. And apart from that, let me tell you something which has sustained me as an artist is also a kind of business I'm doing, which is because I cannot handle selling art at low price or bargaining and all that with my paintings, but I am doing greeting cards. I have been doing greeting cards since I came to USA. And it so happened that when I came, I saw the greeting cards for every occasion here, and but there was no Islamic or Indian cards, you know. So I started doing these Islamic greeting cards, and believe it or not, I started with 4 designs, and now I have 114 designs, you know, in my catalog. And this I do on mail order, quietly from my studio. So during Ramadan, I sell about 15,000-20,000 cards. So that generates me enough income to support the rent of my studio. I pay almost $1,200 for the rent. And all this, as I say, I'm blessed. That's again and again, I'm grateful with my heart. I'm so grateful that things have happened for me, and I have sustained myself as an artist, and my family, my husband, my children, they're all so supportive that I have just, I think, I feel bad, but I think as an artist, I have been selling smoothly. So that's a blessing. It's because of the God's will is there, I think.
And I think that what you said, you know, when the heart is true, the business is true. That's a really profound realization that you've been living and modeling through your work. I know we have another caller on the line, so maybe we can go to the next. We are approaching the end of the call, so we want to make sure we have an opportunity mm-hmm. for those with questions to bring their voices in.
This is Pallavi. Pallavi. What a beautiful morning it has been, Salmaji, listening to your journey. The question I had was, I know you said you've been drawing from the age of 4, but have you ever, maybe in the early part of your journey, experienced what, you know, artists call the gap? You know, where you have a vision of something you're trying to create, but it hasn't fully manifested into reality, like on the canvas, but there's a gap, and you know, the heart, the mind, the soul knows what that is. So have you ever experienced that? And if so, how have you worked through that?
Yeah. Actually speaking, not totally, but yeah, in the sense when my children were small, my daughter was born and 5 years after my son was born. But again, in those days, my schedule used to be like this, that whenever they took an afternoon nap, I will go quickly in the kitchen. There was a table. We lived in apartments in Iran and Kuwait. So I used to have a table in the kitchen, which I will cover when I'm serving food. I mean, remove the things. And when I'm painting, I remove everything and put the plastic and paint the small pieces. I did that, you know. So, and believe it, and then sometimes, you know, my daughter would wake up, you know, and early. And earlier than expected time. So she'll walk into the kitchen, and she'll see me putting colors, and she'll say, aha. And I said, wow, she's another appreciative of my art. So she never disturbed me. She would watch me. And I quickly finish it and put it away. But every day, 1 hour maybe, whatever I could. But I have continued painting, and that's again a blessing and blessing. That's all.
Okay, thank you.
So I have one more question, Salma, and
yeah.
I think I mentioned this to you over email also, but this one statement from you, and that is, through my art, I have been able to transcend all physical and mental limitations to create images of transformation. That is so inspiring to me. And when you think about it, what is it? Is it just the quality and depth of your engagement with the art, or it's just the experience? Would you describe that to me a little bit, please?
Yeah, sure. As I said, physically, I could have been, you know, could have felt worse, you know. But the art was my expression, you know, and the same way about this change of religion and, you know, moving in different cultures, they could have hampered me, right? But because I was so connected with my art, you know, the painting and the drawing and the writing also, so that kept me going on, like, you know, without there was a jolt for a second sometimes, you know. Sometimes the tears will fill my eyes, I don't deny that. But then next moment, another voice will come through myself that you are here for certain reason and, you know, art is your way of working. So forget about it. And believe me, any problem I had, if I go to my studio, I just get over it. I mean, very soon it disappears from my mind, you know. So it has been always like that. Art is like my worship. And that is something has really kept me going, you know, from all these situations which can worry somebody. Like, and for me, they have turned out to be blessings.
So it's that connection from deep inside.
With yourself, yeah, with your God and your work, I think. That's so important.
Beautiful, beautiful. How well said. Now, we have one question for you, Salma. Mm-hmm. What can we do for you?
Oh, I need your blessings and best wishes so that I can continue painting and continue spreading this message of hope and love.
All right. Thank you. Thank you so much. Hi, Pavi. Did you have any other questions?
Well, I think, you know, it's been a beautiful call. And I know, Salma, your studio is in Berkeley, and it sounds like you are there on a very, very regular basis.
Yeah, come anytime. Yeah, that is something you can do for me. Come over and visit me.
There we go. Sounds like from what Pallavi described that just stepping into the studio is a
yeah. And even for Pallavi, I'll say, Pallavi, I've changed. Now I have a bigger and more beautiful studio. So come again.
And it'll be beautiful to see. It sounds like, you know, it's your work is definitely very dynamic and it's a representation of your journey. And so I'm sure that, you know, over the months and years, it will continue to transform and evolve.
Sure.
And
thank you.
Deepen in beautiful, beautiful ways. And, you know, I think that whenever art is, it's just one of those channels where we can access the spirit more
mm-hmm.
easily.
Yeah.
And, you know, without words, without concepts, it's a very direct experience. And so in that way, when you have artists who are so tuned in to these deeper realities, these deeper truths, and who are on a very sincere, genuine quest to discover these things for themselves and then through their work, you know, share those messages with humanity, it becomes even more powerful. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you so much for
thank you. Thank you so much, Pavi. I really hope to see you soon.
we've been... Yes, it's just waiting to happen.
Yes, sure. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you, David, also.
Sure. Thank you so much.
Okay, sure.
Thank you all. How grateful we are to be on this call, and such a insightful and such a deep experience of going through this. On count of three, let's all... Thank you, Salma. And so when I say three, if all of you would just say 1, 2, 3. Thank
you're
you,
beautiful.
Salma.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yes.